Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, in the second half, we have musician, Grammy-nominated musician, and all-round thinker, Mike Posner. I think you're going to find this a very interesting interview. First, I'll tell you about Podcast One and Live by Live. Check out Live by Live. They have an app, livebylive.com, for the best podcasts, news, and news you care about. Personalized music stations curated by actual human beings. Anybody can make a playlist, but Live by Live has a massive team of curators and hosts to surf up the music you love and help you discover new favorites, all for just $3.99 per month. Try Live by Live today with a free 7-day trial at livexlive.com/Adam Carolla.
Ladies and gentlemen, the holidays are right around the corner. Before you know it, turkeys will be stuffed, and that fat guy with a white beard will be breaking into your homes in the middle of the night. Don't wait until the last minute to treat yourself or the people you love in life to marvelous Christmas presents like the Carolla Christmas Card Combo. This 3-bottle gift set comes with a jolly Christmas card featuring and signed by each and every person that makes this the greatest podcart in the universe. So head to CorollaDrinks.com today. Get your Carolla Christmas Card Combo for only $60. That's 3 bottles of your choice, plus a Christmas card signed by the entire staff for only $60. Happy holidays from everyone at Carolla Drinks.
Mike Posner is here. Very interesting cat. Grammy nominated. Worked with all the big names. I told you guys, Maroon 5, Justin Bieber, Pharrell Williams, Snoop Dogg. On and on. Sold millions and millions of records and had incredible success. We can talk about that a little, but the thing that's most interesting is kind of not stopped, but switched gears to more intellectual pursuits or more cerebral pursuits. And recently, Mount Everest, walking across America. So I found it very interesting. So let's talk about that.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, first of all.
My pleasure. I got your website. I know the foundation and GoFundMe campaign for the Detroit Justice Center. And
that's right.
Give that information out.
Thank you.
As well. But so for you, you're a track star in high school. You go off to Duke, was it?
That's right. Yeah.
And you get your
education.
Not a track
star, though.
Well, you ran track.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's call you track star.
Okay.
Unless we run into somebody else who was on your track team and they start laughing.
Okay.
You go off to Duke. So first off, where's the music come in?
The music came in around age 8. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It feels like it grabbed a hold of me as opposed to me grabbing a hold of it. I had some older cousins that were real into hip-hop, and I just fell in love with it. I knew I'd do it the rest of my life. I started rapping when I was 8 years old and making beats when I was 13. And yeah, I knew I would never stop. And I just kind of sucked for a while at it from ages 8 to 20, pretty much. But I loved it, and I thought I was great.
Why go off to college?
The answer is I didn't ever dream I could make a living doing it. Mm-hmm. And that changed. I made a friend who became a very popular rapper named Big Sean. We met at the end of high school. We're both from Detroit. And Sean basically got discovered by Kanye West and signed a record deal. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until that happened that I realized I could do it too. Before that just seemed like impossible. And so I was already in school. He got his record deal, and then I started to wrap my head around that being a real possibility for myself. And you know, it's funny, people talk about the law of attraction or whatever, but once I really started to believe I could do that, it honestly happened in about 8 months.
Didn't the Eminem success from your neck of the woods change that, or at least influence you in some ways to thinking, hey, I'm a young white guy from the Detroit area, maybe I could have that success?
You know, it did. Eminem was such a big star when I was 10, 11, 12 years old that, he was in the stratosphere, you know. I didn't really, because he was so famous, you know, I didn't identify or I wasn't able to apply his success, overlay that onto my own life journey.
Right. So if, like, you grew up with him and then you saw him have success, then it's a role model. But by the time you're having he's so big that he sort of transcends being from your neighborhood, essentially.
Yeah. It was something so different about having a friend. You know, a guy you shoot the shit with, and, you know, we used to rap together if we freestyle back and forth, and I thought I was...
Sean.
And I thought I was as good as him.
Right.
And then he did it. He got a record deal, and I was like, what? Okay. You know, I can do that too. And it wasn't even really a belief. It transferred from belief to just a knowing. Like, this is going to happen. And suddenly things that kind of seemed like waste of time, they seemed like opportunities. Like, maybe I should go do that. And, you know, one thing led to another. And basically by my junior year in college, you know, I was taking meetings with all the record labels. I during finals week junior year, I flew and met with Jay-Z, and he ended up offering me a record deal. And it was a wild, magical time. And dreams.
What was that meeting with Jay-Z like when you were 20, 21?
I didn't want to tell anybody about it because I didn't think it would actually happen. You know, I was in finals week at Duke, and, you know, there's a lot of smart kids at Duke getting graded on a curve. So I was really just trying to focus on my studies. My manager at the time called and said, you got to go to New York. I said, I just was in New York, man. I got to write this paper. He said, you got to go. Jay-Z wants to meet you. I said, okay, I'm going to New York, you know, but I didn't tell anybody because I thought I would get there, you know, and they'd say, hey, sorry, he got busy, but this is, you know, his right-hand man or something. I thought that was going to happen. But I got there, and lo and behold, I walked in the room, and he's in this beautiful office, and I was quite nervous. He's very charming and kind, and found a way to make me feel comfortable in the room. And I played him my music, and he started nodding his head really hard, and we sat for about 2 hours, and I felt like he really understood me artistically. And I went back to school and was finishing up paper for sociology, checked the email, and it was an offer from Roc Nation.
So Jay-Z needed to kind of meet you to figure out your temperament. I mean, he could hear your music without you flying to New York, right?
Sure. This is kind of like protocol, I guess, with, you know, signing artists is kind of like there's a certain song and dance to it, and usually a face-to-face meeting is part of it.
And then we'll skip around, but then going off to walk across America and climb mountains and do all these Wim Hof and all that kind of stuff. You'll be happy to know I was in my frozen swimming pool this morning.
Great.
I did not Wim Hof it. I just got in the pool, swam underwater from one side to the next.
That's great.
And got out.
How cold do you think it was?
Well, you've come to the right place because I have a cold tank.
You do?
Yeah.
Great.
And the cold tank is 46 degrees.
Beautiful.
I could get it down into the high 30s, but then maybe I'll build up to that. I've only had it for about 5-6 months.
And let me ask you, did you buy a designated cold plunge, or did you buy like a meat freezer and convert it?
I was gifted a dedicated cold plunge.
Okay.
And somebody, and I'll give a shout out to the company. I just have to think of it in a second, but I'd been talking about the virtues of the freezing swimming pool. And, you know, when I went to Alaska, I went in the lake in Alaska and all that. I've been talking about how good this is for so long that somebody finally just said, here's a tub.
That's great. But let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, like, when I get out of those ice baths, I'm high for...
Well, tell us what you do, and we'll drill down.
I'm trying to figure out, you know, in L.A. what I do. I have a house in Michigan. I just get in the freaking lake there. But here, that's why I asked you. I need to figure something out. I bought a big meat freezer, and I'm trying to figure out how to... I've seen some of my friends have those. But I've been able to... I've been really blessed. I got to train with Wim Hof twice now.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to talk about that. Renew with a U. Renew Therapy is the name of the company.
There
that came over, that dropped it off, set it up.
All done.
They even showed up with bags of ice.
Boom.
And they were like, I go, why do you have all these bags of ice? They're like, well, you want to get into it right now, right? And I'm like, well, I could wait. I could wait until the morning. I'll
That's
let it cool down.
That's
how
it always is with me, too. Like, I stall sometimes for hours. But then when I finally get in, I feel amazing. I mean.
Well, how long do you stay in?
So, with usually 10 minutes.
10 minutes is a long
usually
time.
10 minutes. Now, when I was training for Everest, I lived in Colorado. I lived on a river, the Eagle River. And a river is a lot colder than a tub. Why? Because the water's moving.
Mm-hmm.
So in a tub, you sit there and some heat goes off of your body and heats up all the water around you just a little bit. So the water is actually getting a little warmer.
Yeah, the tub, it's interesting. You climb into 40-something degree water and you sit there for a while and you can feel that where your knees are bent, where there's creases, where there's a little warmth growing in there. And if you straighten your legs out, you'll feel it.
Oh, like
you can feel the heat kind of building up in the elbows, inside knees, like in the folds of your belly, like I have. You know, you feel it down there. If you stretch out, you feel it come in. It's like crazy how your body just activates to warm itself as quickly as possible. But the river does not offer that.
Right. And so in the tub... Now, that's one of the tricks Wim told us. He said, if you're worried about your hands, he goes, when you get in the tub, just put them between your balls and your leg.
Right.
And close your legs. And your hands stay warm because they're not really touching the water. It's touching your legs.
Right.
Anyway, so what I found is, you know, you get in there and with Wim, the water's like 33. Like you open up the tub or the pool and there's ice in there.
Right.
And you got to break the ice to get the water under it.
Right.
And you get in, and it's freaking cold, you know?
Right.
But it's cold for 1 minute and then 2 minutes, and then you're just there. Mm-hmm. And something happens in the mind where, I don't know about for you, but for me, it really quiets the mind down.
Mm-hmm.
And those last 8 minutes are incredibly peaceful. And I get out, and yeah, like I said, I feel... For like I'm high for hours afterwards.
Well, I got up my game because I go 3 minutes and not 10 minutes, but I need to I gave myself an initial offering, which is like 46 degrees, 3 minutes, but
that's
I've
great.
Not been, well, it's, it, look, you can get 85% of it done just by dunking yourself in freezing water. I mean, if you stay in there 10 seconds, you'll still get good benefit. I have found that the real benefit is making yourself do it.
Mm.
There's two benefits that kind of come from it. There's the physiological benefit, but to me, there's more of a psychodynamic benefit, which is I am going to break my own will and go do this thing that is physically uncomfortable on a daily basis. And I believe that, you know, all... You know, peace and love to Wim Hof, but I believe the more important positive aspect of this is you just saying, I have dominion over myself.
Yeah.
I can control myself. I can go into this thing. Most people would scream and jump out. That's not going to be me. I'm going to sit there, I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to try to basically get into a sort of REM-esque place sort of mentally where I can just sort of put things aside, put the pain aside, put whatever the physical discomfort is aside, and basically have dominion over myself. With so many people who, when I say, oh, yeah, you can do this, they go, I can't do that. I never do that. And I go, why not? And they go, I hate the cold. I can't do that. I can't do it. And I was like, you're basically admitting you're weak in a way. Or you're basically admitting is you're not in full control of yourself.
That's right.
There's something another part of your brain, which is kind of controlling you, saying, you know, have another Cheeto, crack a soda, watch a little more TV. Like, we all have that part of our brain. Every time you pass through, every time you're driving down the freeway and you see a big In-N-Out Burger sign up there or Carl's Jr. or something, sure. Or every time you turn on the TV and they're showing one of those slow porn shots of a Kentucky Fried Chicken sandwich, you go, God damn. God, that looks good. But then there's another part of you that has to have control,
yeah,
and go, not going to do that. And the people that are having difficulty are the people who are being ruled by that other side of their brain, which is saying, have the KFC chicken sandwich, stay away from the cold tub. You do what feels good.
That's right.
Well, it seems good for the day, but get back to me in a few years and let me see where those people are at.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I agree with you that that psychodynamic benefit, as you called it, is a big part of the cold. And Wim would agree with you 100%. You know, dominion or taking that personal sovereignty back.
Right.
Yourself is so important. And I know we wanted to segue into my walk, but this was a big part of my walk. You know, I was sitting, you know, we talked a little bit about my music. So after this record deal, I had some success, man. I had some hits for myself, wrote some hits for other artists. And I felt like I was like living in this little sandbox in West Hollywood. And I kept making the sandbox a little more comfortable and a little more comfortable, you know, another hit, you know, making a little more money, moving to this house, blah, 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 trying to make the surroundings like a little better, you know? And I thought one day I just, like, I felt so trapped under the weight of my own life. And I thought, I think I'm doing this wrong. I think I need to make it uncomfortable or I'm never going to grow. I'm just going to be like this small version of myself. And so that's why I think I got caught in the gravitational pull of this idea of walking across America, because I knew it was going to be horrible. And it was beautiful as well, but in a physical way, it was really horrible. I mean, it really hurt. And it was so hot, you know, and you had to wake up early every day because that sun beating down on you. And I never wanted to do it. Like, as I was doing the actual walk, each morning my alarm go off on my watch at 4 a.m. I wanted to sleep every single day. But I'm flexing that same muscle that we're talking about, getting in the cold plunge. It doesn't matter if you don't want to do it. I'm going to do it anyways. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm going to do it anyways. And so I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody that is like always happy or always 100% motivated. But I do know some people, and I aspire to be one of them, that show up no matter how they feel. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter if you feel like getting in the water or not. You got to do it anyways. And that discipline, which seems like an austerity, it seems like a burden, it seems like some people might call it masochistic, you know, it actually is freedom.
Mm-hmm.
How? So how is that freedom? Well, because I had the discipline to get up and go every morning at 4, well, I was able to walk across America. Mm-hmm. Without that discipline, like that big thing, that big, beautiful thing that I accomplished that changed my life, that's not on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you got some discipline, some sovereignty, some dominion, as you called it so poignantly.
Well, it's kind of interesting and kind of funny. The water, I had two water heaters go out in the same week. One was in Malibu and the other was in La Cañada. And each house, the water heater went out, and it was told to me, this thing's going to be down. It's going to be down for a few days. So, you know, good luck. And I was like, makes no never mind to me.
That's right.
I'm going to be in the cold tub and the shower's going to be 30 degrees. The cold setting on the shower is going to be 22 degrees warmer than the cold tub is. Yeah. And the cold tub and the pool's going to be 10 degrees hotter than the cold tub. So I don't need another water heater ever again.
You're good.
But what it does is everyone else was traumatized because they couldn't take a hot shower. I was like, It was a lateral move for me. It's like, man, I didn't have any thoughts about it.
That's right.
And it just goes to show that you can build up to a certain point. And then once you're used to kind of putting yourself through things, then things like no hot water for 3 days doesn't even sound like anything.
That's right.
Versus could have been devastating 10 years ago if you told me that before I was doing the cold water plunges. And I'm not saying it all has to do with water temperature. It's just a general life thing. If you get up and jog 10 miles every morning, then jogging 3 miles doesn't sound like shit.
There's a real momentum to this stuff.
There's right.
Look, I am a skinny Jewish kid from the suburbs of Detroit. Like, I was a kid when I was two types of kids, when they see a puddle, one jumps in it, one walks around it because they're kind of scaredy cat. I was that second kid.
Right.
Like, around the puddle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these small acts of discipline. Like, greatness is small acts of discipline repeated over time, you know? So, like, for me, it started off with piano, actually. Because I told you, I grew up and I rapped and I made beats. Well, I had my first hit, and then my career sort of tanked a little bit after that. And I was, like, ice cold. And I thought, well, I still like music, so maybe I should take this time. I got no shows or whatever. No one cares about me. I'll get better at music. Start playing piano. I'm like 23, 24. And I started getting like obsessed with it. And I'm playing 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day. And I start to get a lot better. Oh, it's like, heck, like, whoa, I'm an adult now, but I can like do anything with hard work, repetition, you mm-hmm. know? And so then it went from like the piano, and I thought, I remember I got curious about fasting.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what if this Sunday, like, I just don't eat anything? So one Sunday, I didn't eat anything. And I started playing with that, and I did like a 6-day water fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's like discipline, you know, that part of my brain you're talking about that wants the in and out, you know, it's nagging at me for 6 days. Not just for in and out for anything, you know? And I didn't listen to it. And it just started building this momentum of discipline. So then when it came to the walk, I had this thing, I think I can do this. You know, it's gonna be the next step on the discipline path. It's gonna be hard than anything else, but because I built up, I think I can do it. So went to that, and you know, we can talk more about the walk across America.
Yeah.
I got bit by a rattlesnake on the walk.
I read that.
And
well, how many days does it take to walk across America?
It depends on how many miles you do a day. But for me, it took, and there's a strategy to this thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So less people have walked across America than have climbed Everest.
Really?
But there's people doing it every year, guys out and girls out there right now. Mm-hmm. But they estimate about 10 to 15 a year. So not a lot of people. But a lot of them like to write books about it. So, I started researching the thing, and I found out there's a strategy to it. So, you know, it's kind of the tried and true way, though people do it other ways, is to go east to west
mm-hmm.
and start in spring.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go fast enough, you're done before winter.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. And so, you know, for me, it I thought it was going to be a more loose experience, mm-hmm. a little bit hippy-dippy, like I'd mm-hmm. meet some nice people, you guys seem cool, maybe I'll chill here a few days. Well, I start walking, I start doing math, and I'm like, I got the Rocky Mountains, and I don't want to be there when it's cold.
Right.
So I got to go. I got to go every day, 6 days a week. I take one day off. And it became this exercise and discipline. And
how many miles a day did you average?
Usually I was doing 24. But it's such an interesting workout, right? Or mission, rather. At no point can you push to your limit. You know, it's not like the Olympics where you give it all you got and then that's it. That's the moment. Well, you know, you give it all you got. You're screwed for tomorrow. You got to repeat that thing again and again and again and again and again.
How many days?
Something like 180 something, I think. So 6 months and 3 days. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what that equates to. But, you know, it's a beautiful experience. I put on social media that anyone can walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
And people came from all over the country. And I'd always ask them two questions. One is, why'd you come here?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes answer was, I'm a fan of your music. I just want a picture. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great, man. No problem. Sometimes it kind of seemed like a scavenger hunt to me. I had nothing to do this weekend, so I went looking for you. Hey, man, no problem. Let's walk. But sometimes it was people that had no one else to talk to, And so I was healing from, my father's death and whatever else I'd been through in my life, and we'd walk together, each healing in our own way. Sometimes it was high school seniors that didn't know what was next. Sometimes it was people whose fathers had also died. Sometimes it was professionals, like we said, stuck under the weight of their own lives, and we just walked together. It was really beautiful. That was question one. Question two was, if I pray for you, what should I pray for? That's a great question. My friend taught it to me. If you're kind of caught in small talk with somebody, mm-hmm. if I pray for you, what should I pray? I usually can move the conversation a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes one word answers. Pray for my health, success, joy, happiness. But sometimes, it's like this kid I met on the Hualapai Reservation in Arizona named Rowan. And I asked him that question. He thought about it and he said, 5 years ago, my dad died from drinking. And I got one sibling, one older brother. And 3 years ago, he died drinking. And it's 3 months ago, my mom died drinking. So he said, if you pray for me, pray for my sobriety, because I struggle with it too. And then he reaches in his truck, He had a red F-350, and he pulls out like a little leather satchel and puts it in my hand. He goes, this is sweet grass and sage. This is going to keep you safe from the bad spirits on our land while you walk on our land. And it's like, these moments are everything.
Right.
This is like, and there's a million of them, so people ask, like, what was the walk across America? Part of it's like, that dominion thing that was part of it for me. That growth, what else can I do? But then, those moments, with Roman, I don't even know what to call that, but I know it's real. I know it's beautiful. And I still feel so freaking grateful that I got to do that, man. I got to do that.
Where would you stay or sleep, or how did that work out?
Yeah.
Sorry to go from
that's okay.
The sort of spiritual to the pragmatic.
No problem.
But are you carrying a backpack?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I walked across America supported. Mm-hmm. So this means that I had a friend that was going ahead of me, usually in an RV,
mm-hmm.
and he would do everything for me except the walking. He was getting our food, he was making sure the route was right, and he was finding places for us to sleep. So most days I was sleeping on that RV, which we would park on the route,
mm-hmm.
or if we couldn't park on the route, I would touch a sign. We would go wherever we was safe to sleep, and we'd come back, and that next morning I'd touch that sign again, and I'd walk from there. Now in the best parts of the walk were the mountain ranges and the deserts, places where the RV couldn't go. We get a smaller car. We sleep in tents. But this is all contrasted with other people, other walkers and runners. Like I said, there's 10 to 15 doing it. And I'm kind of in this thrust in this beautiful community now.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people, a lot of people that do it unsupported, and they carry giant backpacks, or they push big carts, and they're way more badass than me. And I met some of them. This is another beautiful story. The day before I got bit by a snake, I was in Colorado, and there's a guy named Stevie who just got out of the Air Force, and he got a desk job, and he's just like, I can't fucking do this. And he's like, I want to run across America. And I contrast with my experience. When I decided to walk across America, I'm on the news, I'm on Good Morning America stuff. Stevie's own parents, he couldn't even get support from his own parents.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thought he was stupid for doing this.
Right.
And like I said, I'm going to support it. I'm walking 24 a day. He's running 40 a day with a big backpack.
Wow.
And he's going the opposite direction as me. And we freaking cross.
Wow.
We cross in Colorado. And look, man, he seemed like a nice guy and everything, but this is just a testament to how beautiful a human he was. It was like, there's no way I'm going any direction but west. Uh-huh. Okay? Like, I'm going west. You know, I'm not going north. I'm not going backwards. Stevie took the day off and turned around and walked my day with me the opposite direction.
Wow.
Went 16 miles backwards just to connect with me.
Wow.
And he's just like, he didn't even bring a tent. He'd just sleep outside every day. And the police would beat him up sometimes. He's sleeping in parks and stuff. And I remember we talked about headphones. He goes, "You bring headphones?" I said, "Yeah, but I do the first 8 miles every day in silence. And then maybe later I listen to music." He goes, "I ain't bring headphones." "Why not?" "I wanted to connect with myself." He goes, "It was horrible for like 2 months or however long it was. But after that, I found a new place in myself." The next day, I'm walking, and it's freaking hot out, man. August 8th, 2019, and I'm in pain. Like, when I wake up in the morning, I could barely stand up. That's just real. Mm-hmm. And I gotta wrap my head around the fact, like, how am I going to walk 24 miles? Like, I'm trying to brush my teeth, and, like, it hurts so bad just to stand. But, you know, you start to move a little bit, the body warms a little bit, and you start going. And I'm walking, and I notice I'm actually falling asleep as I walk. And this road, Colorado 10, doesn't have a big shoulder. So I think this is pretty dangerous. So I'm gonna stop, and I just went into the ditch next to the road, and I went to sleep. And when I woke up, the sun was up. And when I went to sleep, it was still dark. Mm-hmm. We're going to start walking. Truck pulls up. He said, "You know where you are, kid?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Be careful for snakes here." I said, "Copy that." Yeah, I heard some snakes before already on my journey. And I walked 16. I was just like super tired. I got 8 more to do. I'm going to try to get 24. I go in the RV. The RV is parked on the side of the road. I got like some food and stuff. I come out of the RV, it's time to get my last 8. There's 2 fans there that were walking with me that day. I just feel something bite my ankle, and pain shoots like through my leg. And I'm thinking, what the frick was that, man?
Right outside the RV?
Right outside the RV.
In Colorado, right?
Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that, I heard this sound. Shh. And I thought, shit. And I just realized, you know, poisonous rattlesnake just sunk its fangs into my ankle. You know, and I don't know if you remember the end of Looney Tunes when those colorful circles kind of converge on the center of the screen and mm-hmm. says, "That's all, folks."
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what started. Once that venom started washed through me, the mm-hmm. pain of the bite, it's like, whatever. I was already in pain.
Fuck it.
Once that venom started go through me, it was like, just like the end of Looney Tunes, except instead of colorful circles, it's like black. You know, darkness coming in from the edge of my awareness. And
right moments after you were
five
bitten?
Minutes. Five minutes.
Yeah. Or were you in the RV at this point?
I was just sitting out right in front of it. I think maybe it was under the shade of the RV, mm-hmm. and I never saw the thing. Mm-hmm. There's only 2 ways to get bit by a rattlesnake. One is if you're fucking with it.
Mm-hmm.
The second way is if you surprise it.
Right.
And that's why I think maybe I stepped out. I never saw it, and I don't think it saw me. And so that was the problem. And so, yeah, I just felt myself fading away. And called 911. The guys, the fans that were there that day, Jack, they called 911. They let me talk to the person on the line, and I said, "You know what's going on?" They said, "Look, you're in the middle of La Junta and Walsenburg. They're 70 miles apart. We sent ambulances from both towns, and we sent a helicopter. Whatever gets there first, get in." And I said, "Am I going to die?" And the voice on the other line said, "I don't know, sir." And so, you know, I wait an hour, I'm in the back of the ambulance, and I was thinking, like, this could be the end of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, I'm not gonna waste the last few hours of my life worrying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna enjoy the last few hours. So I started looking around, and I noticed like the paint on the back of the ambulance door, and I just noticed how like beautiful and passionate and like bright the paint was, and it was actually a really peaceful moment. And that I guess proximity to mortality made life more vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced a moment of peace. And part of my life after that was figuring out how to access that peace without almost dying.
You know?
So that's what I'm up to now.
Well,
that's what I work on.
Yeah, I mean, that's that whole thing that, you know, you're in an airplane and it almost crashes and you make an emergency landing and you get out in one piece and you're so thankful to be alive and you swear you're never going to be burdened by any of the petty thoughts or arguments or sort of all the nonsense and all the noise. And then 3 days later, you're screaming at your gardener out in the yard. And the plan is to, when you have those moments, to try to keep that in, have that drift into your day and then into your week and then into your year and then into your life and not quickly forget about it. I have a funny story to share with you about that. Don't worry. It's, I'm not the hero at the end, but it's interesting. So, let me take care of a little business here and tell you guys about Trico. Over a century ago, Trico was the first to make their wiper blades, or to make wiper blades. They invented it, basically. Always been a step ahead of Mother Nature. Trico engineers study every specific driving condition to make sure you're ready for anything. Whatever the weather, Trico wipers maintain maximum windshield contact. I have Trico wiper blades. Brian asked his mechanic uncle what the best blades were, and he said, go with the Tricos. And that was before they came on as a sponsor, so you know they're serious. No matter what your driving habits, you'll always find the right wiper blade for your vehicle at Trico. So, by the way, the future of wipers since 1917, to find a store near you and to see the latest offers, visit TricoCatsAndDogs.com. That is TricoCatsAndDogs.com. All right, quick break. Back with Mike and more revelations right after this.
October 23rd, The Adam Carolla Show is returning to Las Vegas for the Whiskey X Festival at the Cosmopolitan Hotel of Las Vegas. Come and join us. Taste and learn about over 60 whiskeys, including the best of American, Scotch, Irish, single malts, ryes, and more. That's right, a festival of whiskey and a killer place to discover great music. Special musical guests, Fitz and the Tantrums, and St. Paul and the Broken Bones. With great food bites from Jaleo, STK, Bang Bar by Momofuku, Lardo, Holstein's, and Hattie B's Fried Chicken. Go to thecosmopolitanlasvegas.com for tickets. You must be 21 to attend, and keep listening to the show for your chance to win two VIP comp tickets. October 23rd, Whiskey X, Cosmopolitan Las Vegas. Get your tickets now at cosmopolitanlasvegas.com.
So, Mike, the story I was going to tell you is, it was about 7-8 years ago. My New Year's resolution was I was just going to be chillax, you know, like not take everything so seriously. Not that I take things seriously, but like don't get all so caught up in everything and just take a chill pill, you know. And it was New Year's, and that was my resolution. So I got about 2 hours into my resolution, and I had a guy work for me drive one of my old vintage cars over to my house, and I was going to, the way the house was is he had to drive it across the back lawn and park it in the garage that was in the back. Sounds confusing, but that's just how it worked. And I'd been arguing with everyone in my family to clean up the dog shit that was in the backyard all the time, and no one would ever do it. And I was like, it's your dog. I'm paying for everything. I'm on the road. You know, just go out there twice a week and clean up the dog shit, you know. And they never did it. And so at some point, my guy Rob was just like driving my car, and I was standing at the end where the garage was, and I was watching him drive at me. And at some point, it became clear to me that he was going to run right over a huge pile of dog shit in this like synthetic lawn. Like it was, the lawn was like that AstroTurf, but it's $10 a square foot or what, or yard or whatever it is. And he was coming to me like it was like in slow motion. And I was like looking at the dog shit and looking at his wheel, like perfectly lined up with my old Lamborghini and my new synthetic lawn and stuff. And I was like looking at him, and I was like, oh no, oh no. And I literally started like waving my hands. I was standing right in front of him, just like waving my hands because this guy's who he is. He was like looking down or looking at a tree or something. I was like, no, stop, no, swerve, you know. And he just mowed right through this big pile of fresh dog shit. It mashed up into the tires, got under the fender, and then just tracked it all the way down my synthetic. And I was like in the backyard going, fuck, fuck, like screaming fuck as loud as I could. Like, the fuck, god damn it. And I realized this little New Year's resolution didn't make it past noon the next day. So, you know, many attempt.
Yeah.
And I don't think what they realize is you can't just make the proclamation. You have to get into the freezing river.
That's right.
You have to walk X amount of miles a day. Like, you really got to start in on it. You can't just go, no more this or that. You got to start kind of living it, right? Right?
Yeah, yes and no. So, you know, I finished the walk. I did Everest. We can talk about that. But after Everest, I got back from Nepal, and I had signed up before I went to – I knew Everest was going to be a – changed my life. I knew, you know what I mean? I knew something was going to happen. Whether I succeeded or not, if I came back, it was going to change me. So I had signed up before I left to spend 3 weeks in solitude at this Buddhist center. Mm-hmm. And I had seen a documentary once where people were doing these long isolation retreats, basically mm-hmm. just being in a cabin by themselves. And so I had gotten on Google and I found a place that offered just this kind of experience. And so I went there, and I show up. There's this like sweet smiling man there, and he puts my belongings in an old red truck, and he drives me up to this little cabin in the foothills of the Rockies. And there's a single mattress on the floor, just one little room, probably size of this studio. And he says, I'll see you in 3 weeks. He drives away. And, you know, it's like the last human I'm going to see for 21 days, last conversation I'm going to have. And, you know, it's no running water, no electricity, you know, no phone, no laptop, no Hulu, no Netflix, you know, no guitar. And most significantly, no humans. It's alone. And what was I doing there? I was, you know, on paper, you know, like what I was actually up to is I was sitting meditation for 5 hours a day, and I do walking meditation for 3 hours a day. And I was eating, and I was reading holy books, and I was sleeping. But what I was up to was try to figure this shit out of how do you bring back the plane is crashing clarity? How do you bring mm-hmm. back the in the back of the ambulance after the snake bite?
Right.
You know, and I'm sure like you and all your listeners, we've all had these moments. Virginia Woolf called those moments of being where just everything just makes sense. You know, anyone listening can think of one of those right now. For a lot of people, it's the birth of their first child, but sometimes it's not always that big. It's just a moment. You're like, well, I'm just here. And I was trying to figure out how do I access that without almost dying, you know? Mm-hmm. 'Cause I had another one of those moments on the summit of Everest that you might imagine, but it's like, you know, you gotta risk your life to go up there and have that one. So like, this doesn't seem very sustainable, does it? You know? And what I figured out, you know, and I'm not walking around this space 24/7, not even close. But what I figured out is basically I sat down to meditate on the first day, and 30 seconds go by and my mind is, hey, did you notice the person here before you left some spices like parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme. You should go put those in alphabetical order. So I stand up, I get off the meditation cushion, and I go put them in alphabetical order. I sit back down and meditate again. I'm trying to figure out, how do I access that peace? And my mind's right back. You know, you have an exercise today, and you're going to be sitting a lot meditating. You might get fat. So you need to go run up the hill 10 times. So my mind literally picks me up off the cushion again, drags me out the door, and I run up the hill 10 times. I sit back on the meditation cushion the third time. I'm sweaty, I'm out of breath. And my mind starts rehearsing, like creating a script of what I'm going to say to my friend when I'm done with this retreat. Like it's going like, dude, like it was amazing. I went deep. There was no one there, no running water. I went so deep. You can't. And I'm realizing like, these are all actually going to be lies, because the only thing I'm actually doing here is thinking about what I'm going to do when I'm not here. Right. So so it took me about 5 days, and that thing, I grew to like know this voice that keeps interrupting in my, maybe we call it my mind. I call it Charlie. I got to know it pretty well. One of the things I noticed about Charlie is, A, he's not as smart as you think Charlie would be. One is like, he's very negative. Like you ever do doomsday scenarios where like, you think like, well, if this happens, then that might happen, then that might happen. And then like, you're like at the end of it, you're dead or something, you know? Is he did a lot of that. And the other thing about Charlie is, good Lord, is he repetitive, man. You know, it's like he wants to repeat the same Big L lyric that I used to listen to in middle school on this CD like 45,000 times. It's like, hey, man, you just told me this, you know, 30 seconds ago, and like 700 times before that. Anyways, on the fifth day, I'm sitting and Charlie is getting quieter, quieter, quieter. And basically the voice in my head just disappears.
Really?
And I'm on my morning sit, which is 2 hours. The time, 2 hours ends. I get up and I realize, even though I'm not sitting anymore, I'm not meditating, I'm still meditating. There's still no Charlie. Like, it's like, I'm not thinking. I'm just there.
Yeah, Charlie, I don't know, is that sort of ego?
If you call it that, the way I think of ego is like the entire, not just the bravado part of myself, but the entire outward facing social identity. The whole Posner isness.
Yeah, yeah.
That's ego.
Yeah, ego doesn't, it used to kind of mean braggadocious, but it doesn't really mean that anymore.
Yes.
It's just a lot of, what about me?
Yes.
What am I going to say? How are people going to perceive me?
Yes.
I guess ego sometimes can be me being bad, like not living up to things, like I'm going to fail, or I want to prepare, or like I don't want this to happen. It's super repetitive. That's interesting. Thing. It's like when you're fasting and you go, man, I could go for some pizza, and you go, quiet, I'm not going to listen to that voice. Or, what about the pizza, boss? You know, it just keeps popping up. Like, it just keeps popping up.
That's right.
Yeah, super repetitive.
That's right. It's so, you know, I go outside and I take a piss, and still, it's no Charlie. It's no thinking, no mind. And I finish taking a piss, you know, walk inside, wash my hands, and I start making lunch. I put an avocado on a cracker. It's like I'm eating real simple there. Still, like, it's no thinking. And I put the thing in my mouth, and it's like flavor explodes. And I could tell you, like, that was the best meal I've ever had in my life. And the main ingredient was a quiet mind. And so I'm starting to figure it out. And what I figured out is ego, this whole idea of Mike-ness, only exists when Charlie exists. And when Charlie is not there, this peace is there that I felt in the ambulance, that I felt on Everest. And it's they don't have this always the same emotional immediacy like of climbing Everest, of course, but the deep underlying peace is there when Charlie's quiet. And so Charlie can only be quiet like through presence. Presence. The only time to be present is here, and the only place to be present, the time to do it is now, and the only place to be present is here. And so we can only find that peace like right now, right here, by not listening to Charlie and just being here, you know. So that's my mission now, as I live my life and I fuck it up every day. But there are moments that I don't fuck it up every day. You know, when I'm sitting in this chair, I'm going to leave some of my awareness in just my body. And when I listen to you, try not to be listening to what Charlie's saying about what you're saying and just be here. And this returns me to that peace. And, you know, I'm 33 and that's the best I've figured this shit out so far.
Now, so my inner Charlie starts thinking, well, if I went somewhere for 21 days and I started being really quiet and meditating and walking and having a lot of thoughtful moments, I would immediately have like jokes popping into my head. Like I feel like my head would be freed up, and then there'd be some creative thing that would like float in.
Yeah.
Cause I'd go, you know, when it's noisy, it's hard to create because it's like you're driving, lights flashing, horn honking, you know. Mm-hmm. But then you go to that quiet bench down by the lake, and that's when you can get some writing done or whatever that is. And it struck me that if I was in this environment, if I was walking across America, I'd be like, oh, I got to have a notepad. Because I'm going to have all these ideas, observations. And I don't even really mean like work, like I'm going to sell this or something. But I was like, I'm going to see so many things that are going to spark so many thoughts.
Yeah.
And I'm going to want to capture those. And I would probably have 35 notebooks filled up by the time I got to, you know, to Montana. I'm trying to think, what states did you, started in?
I started New Jersey. I went New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, Arizona, a little smidge of Nevada and California.
And you're creative, you're a creator and you're an artist and you have songs and ideas, you know, these things, you know, when you quiet the noise, sometimes some of these ideas start coming in.
Yeah.
Did you have a rule, a protocol? Could you shut off that part of your mind?
Well, you don't necessarily want to, right? Because, you know,
I wouldn't.
Occasionally, yeah, you're right. Your Charlie says some good shit occasionally, you know? And that happened. That happened while I was on that retreat. You know, I had some good musical ideas, and they were like melodic ideas. Sometimes you have a lyric idea, you could write it down. But a melody idea, if I'm in normal life, I record it on my phone and I have it. But there, I couldn't. So, this is like one, it's like a trick for creativity, right? You know, you if you can shut off your mind or not listen to as much, then you're right, those ideas can flow through. There's a thing in the Buddhism, a concept called store consciousness. We have like normal consciousness, like we're operating, we're having a conversation. They have this idea, store consciousness, which is like the deep unconscious. It's like, you know, you have that meeting that's really important or something, and you got to get up at 6 a.m. and you wake up at 5:59. You ever have that without the alarm clock?
Right.
That's store consciousness.
Right.
You know, so I would play with that too. Well, let me put this thing I want to remember in store consciousness, and it'll come back. And usually it does. Usually it does. You start to develop that kind of muscle too. But the, you know, the main point, I don't think I wrapped it up with very much clarity, is you don't have to do anything. You know, like someone could listen to this and go, oh, you know, I want to feel that peace. I'm going to walk across America or, you know, do one of these retreats. And that's actually like the opposite of what I've figured out. That's a trick. That's the mind telling you, I got to do this in the future in order to feel good now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a lie. It's always an illusion. The only way to feel good now is to be present now. And that's that's like the paradox of the whole thing. Is like we always think we need to change some external thing. Like if I complete this walk, if I complete this climb, if I make a little more money, if I find the right girl or whatever, then things will be better. But then when I get to that future place, I'm still doing that. I'm just flexing that muscle. And it's always a lie. The only way to feel that peace is to be present now. And some of these big goals or these brushes with death, you know, help me silence the mind, but we can all access that all the time right now, you know, and it's the only time to do it is now. It's hiding the only place we forget to look, which is the present moment.
A good note to go out on, Mike, and please come back. We can so much more to talk about.
Yes, sir.
We've got climbing mountains, and God knows what you're going to do between now and then. Website, MikePosner.com is where you can go, and there's a GoFundMe campaign for Detroit Justice Center, which you can, very worthy cause you can donate to as well. Yeah, Mike, whenever you got something new, or you don't have to have any, let's silence Charlie. You don't have to have anything to plug. You can just
come by and
continue the conversation.
Hey, man, it was a real pleasure being here and just connecting with you. So thanks for having me on. And, you know, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Well, next time we'll take a deep dive on the whole Wim Hof stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I find that interesting. But everyone, you hate the feeling of cold water. Join the rest of the universe.
Let's go.
So you hate it. Now have a little dominion over yourself.
Let's go.
All right. So until now. Oh, by the way, I'm all over the place. You can go to adamcarolla.com. I feel so gauche plugging my dates in front of Mike Posner after being so...
Do it,
so,
baby.
So elevated.
You got to plug them.
Bray Improv, October 30th. I'll be there with Rob Riggle. Shows Baltimore, Philly, Portland. Go to amcroll.com. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Gina Gradenball, Brian, and Mike Posner saying mahalo. Now we have to exact our revenge on the Asian community.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening, Bald Brian on the podcast The Film Vault, and get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Lots of shows coming up. Get them now at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.